says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Aniva nijone gosha othya, nijone gosha othya. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing native peoples throughout the world with native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Why are our history books so full of lies, when no word is spoken of why the Indian dies and dies and dies? Oh, that the Chicana loves the California land. Do our books all say it was discovered by one white man? Well, that's just a lie, one of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Oh, why are the weapons of the war so young? And why are there only rich ones around when it's done? Why are so many of the soldiers black or brown? Do we think it's because they're good at cutting other people down? Well, that's just a lie. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Nazi forces grow again. Ignorance gives them a place. The clan is teaching children to hate the human race. Where once there was a playground, now an MX missile plant. Do they think it's fun and games to see just how much we can stand? People die around the world from starvation and grief all the time. Some folks try to avoid the truth by saying God and gun will provide. In Rome, in Cape Town, in Beirut, San Salvador, Greensboro, Belfast, Manila, and many more. It's a crime. Do we think the fascist right will save the world in time? They try to tell us so. We've got to tell them no.
No More Genocide in My Name by singer-songwriter Holly Near. More than 25 years has passed since that song was an anthem of the U.S. peace movement. Sadly, that song's message still needs to be heard today as the United States government, along with the so-called coalition of American allies, continues to wage war in Iraq. And regardless of whether you are for or against the war, I think everyone agrees that the Iraq war is a real tragedy. Ashway, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we share a Wolf Mountain Radio interview with Mr. Adrian Delgado, a former U.S. soldier who served in Iraq. Adrian spent time at the infamous Abu Ghraib prison, where he saw firsthand the situation there. Adrian, faced with the reality of war and U.S. military policy, applied for and finally received, after a very difficult process, conscientious objector status and an honorable discharge. Mr. Delgado now travels throughout the country, speaking about the Iraq War to whomever will listen. It takes a person of courage and conviction to speak out against U.S. military policy. Adrian is such a person. One very important point to make is that Adrian Delgado, previous to serving in the military, spent many years living in the Muslim world. He speaks Arabic and is very familiar with Middle East culture. This gave Adrian a special insight into Iraqi society, since he often was able to visit and converse with everyday Iraqis. Learning about and understanding Iraqi culture is something most U.S. and coalition soldiers do not do. In fact, most U.S. soldiers have little cultural contact with the civilian population. Most American military personnel are kept isolated from the people. Soldiers tend to stay within their armored compounds when not out on patrol. It is not uncommon to hear servicemen and women speak with contempt for Iraqis, even though they are there to, quote, help the Iraqi people, unquote. Despite living in the information age, it is incredible how little many people really know about what is going on in Iraq. The the United States news media, with few exceptions, seems to just report what the official military information officers put out as the whole story. Independent investigative news coverage has also become a casualty of this war. The Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld-Rice administration has fine-tuned the art of public deception and control of the press. The White House and Pentagon's press briefings on the war is a well-orchestrated magic act. As an investigative journalist, it seems to me that the so-called mainstream media, now so politically and financially controlled by the right-wing supporters of the Bush government, seem to care little about the misinformation campaign being carried out by the American government. This, too, should be very alarming to everyone. We need an open and fine, free press. We need the news media to inform and explain the real situations going on in the world. Instead, most journalists cover the Iraq War with minimal press freedoms, limited by official Pentagon restrictions and rules of coverage designed for public relations. This is why it is so important to hear free and honest comments from those men and women who were or still are in Iraq, like today's program guest, Mr. Adrian Delgado. My conversation with Mr. Delgado took place in the spring of 2005 when Adrian visited Southwest Florida at the request of a fine community organization, NaplesForPeace.net. Under Mr. Delgado's public slide presentation at a Collier County library, we of Yad Kiddush Native Center had the pleasure to interview Adrian for this Wolf Mountain Radio program. Please listen now to my conversation with Mr. Adrian Delgado, former United States soldier in Iraq and now peace activist. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinan Wan Takwasin to all of our relations.
Thank you. My name is Aiden Joshua Delgado. I'm 23 years old. As you said, I'm a veteran of the Iraq War, and the background I come from is kind of an international background. My father was a diplomat, so I grew up in different cultures around the world, Senegal, Thailand, and Egypt, where I learned to speak Arabic, and that really affected how I saw things when I went to Iraq. And I'm coming back now from the war after having spent 6 months in Nasiriyah, 6 months in Baghdad, in Abu Ghraib prison, and I've become very critical of some of the excesses that I saw and some of the abuse that went on, and I guess what I'm trying to do is bring home the reality of the war to the homeland, because we're not seeing it, and nobody's showing it, and I want people to take away a balanced view. So I guess that's what my mission has been now, and I've been traveling around to some different peace groups, talking wherever they'll listen, and trying to get people to face the reality of the war.
In your slide presentation, in your talk today, you mentioned really something that's very of importance to me, and that is the culture of the military and really how in many ways it's a very institutionalized racist system where young people, especially people from the South, predominantly poor, who might not have any experience with many other world cultures, are forced into a situation where they look at Iraqi people not only as an enemy, but really not even with any respect. Would you please talk a little bit about this, I would say, military culture and the type of racism that I see very prevalent, not only in the American military and the soldiers, but in Euro-America as well, the way it's reported that Arab people, Muslim people, Iraqi people are denigrated as what they call in English towel heads.
Well, I think that the culture of the military has always been brutal and violent. That's its purpose. The military's design is to injure others. For that end, they must dehumanize other people, because you cannot injure someone you think is your equal and every bit as human as you are. Towards that end, in the post-September 11th world, we began the shift to making Arabs and Muslims our enemies. And I think it's been very effective. The rhetoric on TV and in the media is that the Arabs are against us and that Islam is incompatible with Christianity and that they're trying to harm us. As a result, in the U.S., it's very widespread to hear the term Haji, which is like the new ethnic slur for Arabs and Muslims, and it's very, very prevalent in the U.S. military in Iraq, and it goes into creating a lot of the civilian abuses, the deaths of civilians, and also the torture and the murder of prisoners like at Abu Ghraib.
When And you mentioned Abu Ghraib, especially in your slide presentation this morning. You mentioned how when some of these atrocities and abuses became known to you and other fellow soldiers, that your command and the command in general gave orders or instructions to not talk about it, not to send photographs home, or to speak to other soldiers about these tortures and abuses and killings. Would you share some of your comments about that?
Well, in late December, early January, word had circulated through Abu Ghraib about some of the abuses going on. We didn't know the nature of the abuses. We didn't know the imagination of what they were doing. We had heard that they were torturing the prisoners in some way. This was on the other side of the prison camp. My unit wasn't directly involved. But an officer came to us and told us that if we had seen anything, that we were not to talk about it, and that we would destroy any incriminating photographs. In other words, that we were to shut this down. He said, we're all a family here. We don't air our dirty laundry in public, meaning that we were to keep this within the military and not to let it get out. And it didn't break in the States until months later. So there was an informal gag order telling people not to talk about the abuses and not to let it get out.
Thank you, sir. Obviously, in American mainstream media, television, when I think it culminated in Bush's circus stunt on landing on an aircraft carrier, proclaiming that there's victory and the war is over. Would you talk about your personal experience, especially the fact that you speak Arabic and you could talk to the people in Iraq about American, how they were, what was the attitude of Iraqis towards Americans from their first arrival and up to now here in the spring of 2005?
I must say that in the beginning of the Iraq war, the Iraqis were very friendly. We were greeted with cheers and there was a sense of jubilation. Iraqis who would speak to me would say, you know, thank you for liberating us. They really were very grateful. 6 months later, their attitudes had taken a dramatic turn for the worse, and they were asking when we were going to go home. 12 months later, by the end of my tour in Iraq, they were asking, when are we going to go home? We want you to go home. So that although they began with a very positive view of us, having liberated them from Saddam, 12 months of the occupation and the brutality and the harshness of the occupation had turned them against us. Things like prisoners being killed at Abu Ghraib and the increasing rumors of abuse and heavy-handedness from the coalition had turned the Iraqis who initially favored us against us. And now the public opinion is vastly against us. Over 50% of them would rather have Saddam back than have the coalition. What does that say about us? We really need to re-examine the way we're conducting this because we're losing the hearts and minds of Iraqis, or we may have lost them already.
Yad Kiddushi Native Center has a long history of promoting peace. One of our organization's important program is named Ganili Goa, an indigenous people's cultural, spiritual life way of having reverence for all life and respect for all cultures based on the Haudenosaunee Great Law of Peace. In our programs, peace education and conflict mediation trainings, we teach respect for cultural and religious diversity. One of the things that bothers me very much about the Iraq War view from America is how it denigrates Islam. Recently in the news, there was a U.S. Army general in full uniform publicly speaking out in a church about how America's Christian God is on his side, making the U.S. military campaign justifiable under Christendom. It reminded me of Pope Alexander VI, 1493, Inter Satera Papal Bull, which authorized colonial conquest of the so-called non-civilized, non-white world in the name of Christianity. I'm reminded of how U.S. Army warfare against my native peoples of what's now called North America were promoted as campaigns to tame the wild Indian savages. In fact, United States and Canadian government policy towards us American Indians, First Nations peoples, were based on War Department contracts with Christian missionaries who did everything they could to stomp out indigenous culture and ceremonies of those who survived years of attack and removal from our ancestral homelands. While I am troubled by Muslim extremists who advocate terrorism, I am also troubled by how a fine spiritual faith, Islam, is often negatively depicted by some as a religion with no regard for peace. I think when one can learn to hate another person or culture based on negative stereotypes, it becomes possible to think of that person or culture as not only less equal, but as some Christians might say, the devil. Adrian, would you share any comments on how disrespect for non-Christian, non-Western cultures are often underlying the attitudes of some people towards Iraqis, say in the U.S. military, or in the news media, or public opinion, which helps justify this U.S. invasion? It kind of mixes a Christian versus Muslim concept.
I think there's been a conscious effort to frame this as a theocratic war. It's a good motivation for people. It motivates soldiers. It motivates people to join the military. And President Bush has been very outspoken about his own Christianity. And occasion has even slipped up and said that we're on a crusade in Iraq. He quickly recanted that. But there are prominent voices in the media, including evangelicals, on evangelical television saying that we should turn everybody in Iraq into a Christian. And a lot of soldiers believe that this is a conflict between two irreconcilable traditions, that Islam and Christianity can never coexist in peace. And I think this is, I think it's false. I think there's a misrepresentation of Islam inherent in that. But I also think it's something that the government has been actively trying to foster by holding these sort of vague, nebulous comments about Islam and making comments about Islamic fundamentalism, which basically just means people believe in the fundamentals of Islam. It's no different than people believe in the fundamentals of Christianity. And so there's been a conscious effort because it's a good motivator. And religion is the best reason to go to war, the best drive for individual soldiers.
You were a child then. You did sacred ways. You needed no one to show. Until the Christians came. The Christians came.
the power to kill a love that's strong. No, they never had the power to keep us from coming home.
Christians Came, a song from the Songs for Justice Project. That music reflects the conquest of American Indian First Nations peoples from the assault of missionaries who first sanctioned massacres and later forced removal, relocation onto barren lands called reservations, which made survival very difficult for once free tribal peoples. I must also mention the so-called boarding school era, an abusive time when young Indian children were kidnapped, taken away from their people, and forced to adopt so-called Christian civilization. Many generations of indigenous peoples all over the world have suffered the tragedy of this so-called religious conversion to Christianity. The CD features singer-songwriter Dennis Harrison, Gabe Horn, Betty Hurst, Ted Williams, Diana Osborne, and myself, Ernest Pritzker. It is available from the Songs for Justice Project here at Kedeschi Native Center. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Kedeschi Native Center. Our program guest today is Mr. Adrian Delgado, a former United States Army soldier in Iraq, who, after witnessing the abuses of the American military in Iraq, decided to question U.S. policy. Adrian applied for and received conscientious objector status and an honorable discharge from the Army. He travels throughout the country informing audiences about what he witnessed in Iraq, such as his time stationed at the infamous Abu Ghraib prison. One important point I mentioned earlier in the program is how Adrian is quite familiar with Islamic culture, having lived in the Middle East prior to his service in the armed forces. He speaks Arabic and, unlike most United States soldiers, has been able to meet many civilian Iraqis, thereby hearing directly the concerns and their views of the Iraqi citizenry for whom the U.S. is there supposedly to help. Adrian, my next question concerns itself with the issue that the vast majority of soldiers in Iraq seem to be from poor and minority communities. While the U.S. military is labeled as an all-volunteer service, it troubles me that many combat troops are disproportionately either African-American, Hispanic, Asian-American, poor white, and even Native Americans. In Vietnam, for example, many white, more affluent potential draftees were able to avoid combat by affording to stay in college, while poor and minorities made up the bulk of the military in that war. I often have the opportunity to visit high schools presenting an environmental education program. I've noticed how schools in economically poor and minority communities tend to have repeated visits by military recruiters. Talking with many guidance counselors at different schools, I've learned that poor white and minority neighborhood high schools are in fact targeted more often by armed forces recruiters who know that for many kids in low-income families, joining the Army is an attractive offer, a perceived way to get out of poverty and perhaps even earn some money for future college. Aideen, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, in my anecdotal experience out on the West Coast, when I was visiting high schools, I found that the predominantly white and more wealthy high schools had less experience of military recruiting, and the students were therefore less likely to join. When I went to the poorer, more urban high schools that had a high minority population, they told me that they had encountered recruiters almost weekly, and that many of them were thinking about joining the military because it represented a good option when college wasn't really an option for a lot of them. So just in my personal travels, I've encountered a lot of the discrepancy between recruitment and the recruitment of minorities. I mean, my unit was about half Hispanic, and I think that's very telling. And if you look at the recruitment numbers, Hispanics and blacks are overrepresented in the military beyond what their population in the overall U.S. population is.
In our conversation, I mentioned how I see the Bush-Cheney administration as really developing the fine art of public deception and control of the press. The White House and Pentagon press briefings about the war is really well orchestrated. It's kind of like a magic act. And I'm really concerned that a lot of the journalism has sanitized the real image and truth of war, and that if you see the evening news, really you don't see much of the reality of the war, both affecting Iraqis as well as U.S. soldiers. And it almost looks like a video game in some cases. Your slide presentation today was very much more realistic and very graphic. Would you please describe to our listening audience a little bit about what it was like for you entering Iraq and seeing firsthand and smelling the winds of war, so to speak, the situation at war? What was it like when you came into Iraq?
The country, I was following behind the 3rd Infantry Division. We were following in the wake of a major army division that had done a lot of the fighting. So we saw a lot of the trail of destruction they left behind. Burned vehicles, crushed vehicles, city blocks leveled, areas of the Nasiriyah were devastated from airstrikes and other action, things riddled with bullet holes. So there really was just this palpable sense of desolation that we had driven most of the civilians out of the southern part of Iraq, and we had decimated everything in our path. And it was very difficult for me. I mean, I was afraid for my own life. I was nervous. I was excited being there. All kinds of different emotions swirling in me. But it was seeing how the soldiers interacted with the individuals, the human beings, the Iraqi prisoners, the Iraqi civilians. That's what really drove home how objectionable this war was to me. It wasn't the destruction of buildings. It was the destruction of people. And when I saw how people were treated and the racism and the condescension inherent in a lot of how people behave, not everyone, not every soldier is bad, clearly, but there was a lot of racism, a lot of ugliness that came out, and that's what I criticize.
The common perception of the media and many Americans, I think, sadly feel this way, that most Iraqis are terrorists, are very dangerous people, very unfriendly people, and of course most soldiers have very little interaction with the general public there in Iraq. The fact that you lived in the Arab world, that you are familiar with language, you got to speak to a lot of, or at least to some of the citizenry and the children. Would you share some of what that was like and how you said that they were very friendly and welcoming people?
Well, my experience with the Iraqis was that they were enormously friendly to the coalition and friendly to the individual soldiers, at least in the south. I mean, an anecdote that I think frames this very well is that when I was in Nasiriyah, we were buying bread for a company picnic, and the baker, who was a really poor man, offered us this ridiculously low price. And I told him in Arabic, look, you know, we have plenty of money. We don't need to pay the local price. You know, we can pay a much higher price. And he said, no, 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 you're here in Iraq. You don't have any family here in Iraq. While you're here, I'll be your family. And that was his attitude towards U.S. soldiers that were invading his country. And so after experiences like that, I just really couldn't believe that the Iraqis were this terrible, unfriendly people, when this poor baker living in a one-room hut, you know, offered to take us into his family, in a sense. And that was just awe-inspiring to me and really defined the Iraqi people for me.
Aideen, this is a worldwide radio broadcast. Not only do people in the United States and Canada listen to this program, but all over the world. And many of us are really removed from Iraq on a day-to-day basis except from what we might see on television or read in the newspaper or hear on the radio. And as I've said, a lot of that is really public relations put out by the American military press people. What do you suggest our listeners do to help bring some sanity in this situation?
Always pushes the GI Rights hotline at GIRights.org, or there's also a phone number for it. That's something that anybody can do. It doesn't take skill. It doesn't take a lot of special effort. And so you can just become a counselor for soldiers who are trying to get out as conscious objectors or trying to uphold their rights in the war. It's something that anybody can do. And it's something ordinary people can do to really support the soldiers beyond just putting the yellow ribbon bumper sticker on your car. You can really help them in a meaningful way and also express your dissent in this war by helping soldiers dissent, helping the people who oppose it and have problems come home and come home in one piece. So that's something I always push, the GIRights.org or GI Rights hotline.
There is a radio station working for a better world, social justice and human rights. Independent broadcasting 24 hours a day. Radio for Peace International, Costa Rica. We are giving voice to the voiceless.
Honored to have you on our program today here on Radio for Peace International's broadcast of Yat Kitishi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I'd like for you to know that I had the honor for many years to travel throughout the world as a speaker on human rights and protection of the environment, which afforded me the opportunity to visit many different parts of the world, many different countries, rainforest and arid lands, desert lands. And of course, as an indigenous person, much of my focus was on the well-being of Mother Earth, what in English is called the environment. But I also did see examples of what in English is called war and conflict and what that has done to the environment. In your slides today, you showed some very graphic photos of the oil wells and other areas of the desert being laid waste by war. Would you please talk a little more about the ecological impacts and effects that war has on the environment, what happened to the desert when you were there, for example?
I didn't see oil wells. My main experience was that the land itself was littered with unexploded ordnance devices, bombs, all over the place. So the landscape itself was kind of scarred. But also, the industrial waste of the coalition was not disposed of according to environmental standards, obviously. I mean, garbage was just burned out in the open, tires burned, poisonous substances like radiator fluid and used transmission fluid just poured into the ground because there wasn't any system in place to treat that kind of waste or to handle it safely. So the standard operating procedure in Tulalip Air Base was just to dump hazardous waste in the ground or dig a hole and dump it in the hole, burn up tires or whatever other debris we had. So there were, I had never thought of it in that context before, but there was a lot of environmental stuff going on. At first, I tried to tell my sergeants that we should package up use radiator and transmission fluid and all that stuff because it was going to poison the Iraqis in the future. But then after a while, we tried to do that. We tried to fill up drums, but there was nothing in place to take it away. So eventually we just had to dump it because there was nothing to dispose of it.
Sir, I want to sincerely thank you for coming to Southwest Florida to speak and for sharing your time with us on Wolf Mountain Native Radio. In addition to our interview, you were videotaped for a wonderful TV program entitled Interconnections, produced by the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television, a grassroots media project I am very honored to be a founding board member of. I also want to thank the local peace group here, my friends at NaplesPeace.net, that hosted your talk here in Collier County, Florida. I know they, the TV project Interconnections, and we here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center welcome you back here anytime. Before the end of this broadcast, we will provide our worldwide listeners with some excellent websites for people to become better informed about the war in Iraq and ways to promote peace and justice. Aideen, as I study the recent history and contemporary situation of Iraq, I quite often find myself thinking about the influence of oil in the geopolitics of this situation. But I'm sure there are a variety of reasons why the U.S. government justified its military policy of attacking Saddam Hussein. To me, oil seems to be the major issue as to why America went to war. In the 20th and now the early years of the 21st century, we are literally fueled by oil. Many conflicts in the world occur due to efforts to control energy. Do you consider, as I do, oil to be the major reason why the U.S. went to war in Iraq? I would like to hear your views on this, Aideen.
I would say that's the sole reason. I think it's definitely a contributing factor. I'm not a political analyst. I wouldn't be able to tell you why we are fighting in Iraq. All I can tell you is that it's not because there's weapons of mass destruction there, because there aren't. And it wasn't because we wanted to depose Saddam, because that didn't come about until much later in the war that they changed that reason. Oil, I think, is probably a contributing factor. I don't know if I would go so far as to say it was the main reason, but I think it's definitely been very significant, as well as strategic interests in the Middle East, controlling the Middle East politically, and I think that's also a part of it.
You are listening to Yad Kiddushi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing native peoples throughout the world with native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
United in fear, we trade freedom our prize. For the Patriot Act, as united we securitize. United in power over patriarchy, we misogynize. United in self-righteous arrogance, we imperialize. United in degenerate genital mutilation, we circumcise. United we consume and spend, and united we capitalize. United in greed, we exploit. As united, we multinationalize. United, we commit economic suicide. As united, we globalize. United in belligerent violence, we waste trillions. As united, we militarize. United, we massacre millions and think we're so brave. United, we fantasize. United, we bomb, destroy, maim, mass murder, slaughter, and terrorize. United, in massive denial, we look the other way united we atrocitize. United in might makes right we dominate, and united we hegemonize. United we pillage the third world, and then united we moralize. United we covet the resources, and united we monopolize. United in total denial we deny, that united we brutalize. We believe without question the star-spangled propaganda our leaders so unceasingly televise. And united, we so very obediently swallow the many fabricated red, white, and blue lies. And united, we're so blind with closed eyes, except one-eyed astral spies. And in the many resource-rich countries that united we occupy and we colonize. And united, we impoverish and victimize. Corporate billion is pride, and yet another heartbroken mother cries, and yet another star-spangled bomb drops, and yet another innocent child heinously dies, yet another example of united we collateralize. Just U.S. business as usual, as united we privatize. United we stand completely deranged, global terrorists in our freedom and democracy, disguised as united we stand apathetic and complicit in American terrorism, as united we turn on TV to desensitize, as united we stand in massive denial, as united we ignore the pleas of the innocent ones we exterminize, as united we stand inanely pledging allegiance to the flag of fascist terrorism as their blood on a drum, we stand surrendering our freedom to the real axis of evil, corporations, CIA, and military guys, as united we stand with our heads in the sand, as the American Fourth Reich is born and freedom dies, as united we stand so comfortably numb and deniably dumb that united we don't have sense to realize that united we stand on the brink of the New World Order totalitarian police state. United we are so blind.
Well,
from Lakota singer-songwriter Paul LaRoche from his native band Brulé off his Sound of America record CD entitled Brulé One Nation. That particular song was Injustice for All, a hope and prayer that we here at Yakitishi Native Center wish upon all peoples of the world. Prior to that, we heard the drum Black Lodge. That was from their Canyon CD, Veterans Honor Songs. The particular song was entitled Honoring Those That Returned. And we started off our music set with a contemporary song entitled United We. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. At this time, I want to encourage all of our worldwide listeners to learn more about the culture and history and situation of the war in Iraq and how you can help to promote peace. There are several internet sites that I highly recommend. One particular site is United for Peace and Justice, and their website is unitedforpeace.org. Another very important site is our community group here, naplesforpeace.org. naplesforpeace.org, who hosted peace activist, former U.S. soldier in Iraq, Adrian Delgado's visit to Southwest Florida, maintains a very fine updated peace website, and they have what's called a web biography. That's a connection directly to where Adrian Delgado will be speaking. So those two websites, naplesforpeace.org and unitedforpeace.org, are two very important sites for further information and action. We're going to conclude today's program with a very important song, and that is from Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah. And as a Haudenosaunee woman, singer, songwriter, spokesperson, this very important song entitled The Great Law of Peace refers to what we indigenous peoples refer to as having reverence and respect for all peoples, all cultures, all relations throughout the world. This is a very important and appropriate song to complete today's conversation, my interview with Adrian Delgado, peace activist and former U.S. soldier in Iraq. And I really, again, want to express our appreciation for Adrian being so courageous to speak out. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawan Takwasin, to all of our relations.
Shanapawe Gawayanaslago Sanako Deki O Natto O Natto Daru Shanapawe Gawayanaslago Sanako deki o neto o neto daru shanawe gawe yanaslago sanako deki o neto. Thank you. ago. Sana ko deki onetto onetto. Sana ko deki